The current sponsor of Fraudology is Sardine. If you aren't familiar with them yet, Sardine protects every customer interaction from financial crime. Banks, retailers, and fintechs use Sardine to detect fraud patterns, prevent money laundering, and stop sophisticated scams. You'll get to learn more about them throughout this quarter on Fraudology. But if you'd like to learn more about Sardine now, you can click on the link in the show notes of this episode to read more about them and to request a personalized demonstration of Sardine's suite of products. Welcome to Fraudology Podcast, where we dive into the science and study of online fraud from the perspective of an e-commerce fraud fighter. I'm Carice Hendrick. There's a new story that caught my attention this week that I wanted to share with you all. It reminds me of the very first type of fraud that I was entrusted to detect, and that's on the merchant processing side. I've definitely talked about it here and there, but this story is just very much reminds me of what I was trying to avoid happening when I worked as a risk analyst, I don't know, almost 20 years ago, but there's still a lot of people on that side. And it's an interesting world to be aware of that we don't always talk about when we're talking about fraud. And it also kind of brings up, how do we define fraud? But I'll get into that in just a minute. The headline of the story is that basically Amex and Worldpay, which Worldpay is a Visa and MasterCard payment processor, they're both suing a luxury retailer that sells high-end appliances because of chargebacks. So far, they've received a combined $50 million in chargebacks for the merchant that the merchant hasn't paid or responded to. So this company is called Pirch, P-I-R-C-H. I think in all my notes, I spelled it P-E-R-C-H, but it's Pirch with an I. And they had an online component as well as a handful of stores in Southern California, but they're based in San Diego, California. And they've been in business since 2009. So it's not like they were set up for a few months and then went away. They specialized in high-end appliances like freestanding pizza ovens, full kitchen appliance sets for multi-million dollar houses, and even a handmade statement oven that was more than $50,000. The average transaction was between $15,000 and $20,000. So these are very, you know, high-end kitchen appliances, kind of the ones that you see on real estate shows. If you watch any of those, I think I've already confessed that I'm a fan of Bravo TV. And so they have TV shows like Million Dollar Listing that I enjoy watching just kind of, you know, at night after a long day at work, just to kind of zone out a little bit, or, you know, rest my brain, as my husband would say. So picture really expensive appliances. We're not talking about the kinds of refrigerators or ovens or stoves that you or I have in our home, more than likely. On March 20th of this year, Pirch suddenly closed its doors, and they said it was to refocus on their footprint and their pace of expansion. They claimed their California stores were still profitable, but last week they emailed staff that they were permanently shutting down and processed final paychecks. But without a plan to slowly close operations, they left customers with unfulfilled orders, landlords owed rent, vendors unpaid, and other business stakeholders with money owed. So they didn't have, you know, a plan to file for bankruptcy or to dissolve the company. They just all at once shut the doors with, you know, some orders not fulfilled, with other people probably having issues with their appliances, or, you know, in the middle of working with somebody there, you know, they've already paid a deposit, but they haven't gotten anything for it, or, you know, all those things that can be very, you know, normal in course of business when you just decide to close your doors one day and not resolve all of those things first. That can cause a lot of problems. So because all the signs are pointing to the business shutting down, stakeholders owed money. The stakeholders that are owed money are filing lawsuits, and customers are filing chargebacks. So backing up a little bit, and I think I explained this a bit when I talked about the fraudulent company Chargeback Surety that was being sued by the California Attorney General back in January or February, which, side note, there will be more information on that story soon. A lot has come out, and between Frank McKenna and myself as well, but Frank's really doing a lot of the research, there's a lot of updates. So those will be coming soon. And I think it's just a fascinating case to watch and be aware of. But this is related, but in a different way. So the way I explained merchant processing before still stands. So Merchant processing is the ability for online companies or even in-store companies to be able to accept credit card payments. You usually have a payment processor for Visa and MasterCard that isn't Visa and MasterCard because they are what's known as an open loop system. And then you usually have a direct relationship with Amex and Discover. That has changed a little bit over the years with Amex, but for the sake of this conversation, we'll just say that there's a separate relationship with Amex and Discover directly since they're closed loop systems. And merchants have direct relationships with them or can have direct relationships with them. So when a company goes to get a merchant processing account, they have to go through the underwriting process. Someone has to look at their account. I mean, this is generally speaking. There are definitely some PSPs where you can just register online and provide a little bit of information and be able to process payments. But in the traditional sense, you're going through the underwriting process. You're providing information like, you know, how long you've been in business. If you have processed payments before through Visa and MasterCard, you're to provide previous statements so they can see how much your volume is, how much your average order is, how, you know, often you're processing payments. You know, is it daily? Is it weekly? Is it monthly? Et cetera. It should be daily, but maybe you don't have, maybe you only have sales on Saturdays and Sundays. You know, it might depend on what your business does and, you know, where it's at and all of that. So all of those factors go into a decision of whether a company should have a merchant account or not. And if they're given a merchant account, then sometimes there's a reserve that's required based on risk. For instance, if it's a new company that says they're going to be processing $1 million of Visa and MasterCard and Amex and Discover in the first month, well, then that processor may want some money held aside and say, we need a reserve. Either you pay us up front or we're going to take all of the orders up until your first $1 million and hold that for a year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever they say. Sometimes it's indefinitely and that becomes an issue, but technically the processor can do whatever they want. They can just, freeze sales and take all the money for, a deposit if they need to. And that has definitely impacted business for several online businesses, especially, I know. But it's all because at the end of the day, if the merchant goes out of business suddenly, like this company has, then the merchant processor is on the hook for that money. The merchant processor, whether it be Amex and Discover, or it be, WorldPay or Chase Merchant Services or whoever, Fiserv, whatever the processor is, they're the ones that are on the hook for it. So that's why they can ask for a deposit. They can ask for, whatever information they need, because it's essentially like a line of credit, because especially for online companies, chargebacks can come in, on average up to 90 to 120 days after a transaction is processed. So, they're looking at their liability as the last 90 to 120 days. Well, in addition to that, it can get even more tricky because if a company, and in this company, I think it's very true, if somebody's paying a deposit for appliances that they aren't actually getting delivered for 6 months, well, then that, a chargeback that says, services not rendered or, not provided, those chargebacks can be up to 3 months after the last time you said you contacted the company. So if you paid a deposit or you paid installments and you still haven't gotten the goods yet, you could say that you contacted the company, 9 months after that payment was processed. And if the company still hasn't provided you with what you paid for, you can get your money back. And because this company just up and closed its doors without any like contingency plans or any staff kept on, to handle these things, now Amex and WorldPay are going after them. So that's, a little bit of that in a nutshell. My guess is because they had six or seven stores and then they had an online account and they probably had a few other things. They probably had multiple merchant accounts and it's possible that they had a deposit on their first account, but then as they were processing so much money, they probably didn't get a deposit on the other ones because there was no need to see risk, right? It sounds like everything looked fine until it didn't and they just closed the doors. There wasn't a lot of ramp up. When you're a risk analyst for a merchant processor, you're looking for that ramp down. You're looking for all of a sudden chargebacks going up and sales going down, or you're looking for things that, are abnormal. In this case, they were processing business as usual until March 20th, and then they just stopped. So no more money's coming in, but chargebacks are coming in. So now you have negative balances coming, you know, coming out of those accounts. And it's not always, in fact, it's pretty common not to have your checking account be with the same company that has your merchant processing. So usually that merchant processor is trying to debit a bank account that's outside of their network for chargebacks. Well, if that bank account has been frozen, merchant processor can't get their funds. And when there isn't any communication with customers, those customers usually call their banks to get their money back, right? How many times have you heard someone say, oh, I'll just call my credit card company and I'll get my money back? Well, you know, while customers might think that that money comes from their credit card companies, it doesn't. And I mean, if you've been listening to Fraudology at all in the last few years, you know that. Or if you're, you know, on the fraud side, either on banking or, you know, the merchant side, you know that too. It really depends on, you know, was the transaction card present or card not present? But when it comes to services not rendered chargebacks, those can go to either type of merchant. And so even in-store transactions are eligible to be charged back if the customer can prove that they didn't get their items. And honestly, there's not a lot of burden of proof on the customer. The burden of proof is on the merchant. And that's one of the reasons why Amex is suing them and Worldpay too, but I'll get to that in a minute. Sardine helps their clients reduce fraud rates, decrease false positives, and streamline risk operations with their fully integrated suite of products. You can use Sardine for customer due diligence, fraud prevention, risk scoring, investigations, transaction monitoring, and/or case management. Their suite of products include device and behavior intelligence, identity fraud detection, account takeover and/or payment fraud prevention, issuing fraud detection, KYC and KYB, and AML compliance, all in one platform. With Sardine, banking and online companies can capture deep device intelligence and behavior biometrics for every customer touchpoint and interaction on your website or app. Stop fraudsters from hiding their true identity. Prevent fake account signups. Detect synthetic and stolen IDs. Block bot attacks, click fraud, promo code abuse, fake listings, and device obfuscation. Prevent unauthorized access to customer accounts. Stop the use of stolen credentials. You can detect social engineering schemes like romance scams, fake financial advisors, and voice cloning attacks. Prevent fraudulent online payments, account funding, and transfers. Protect users from APP fraud, that's authorized push payment fraud. Block stolen payment credentials and decline transactions likely to result in ACH returns or chargebacks. You can also detect refund and/or returns abuse. Tackle first-party fraud and stop fraudsters from gaming your policies. Stop card cloning attacks. Prevent unauthorized card-not-present and card-present transactions. And ingest risk scores in real time for authorization decisions. For KYC and KYB, perform customer due diligence, global watchlist screening, and document verification all in one platform. Support flexible onboarding flows that route users down streamlined paths or step-up verifications. And for AML compliance, centralize your compliance operations in one dashboard. You can configure real-time and batch transaction monitoring rules, investigate suspicious activity, streamline your SAR or UAR filings, and automate case management. I've seen a lot of fraud tools and can safely say that that's a lot of capabilities to have all in one platform. You can take advantage of all or some of these features to either supplement or replace your current fraud tools. To learn more about Sardine's suite of products or to contact them to request a personalized demo of their platform, go to www.sardine.ai. That's www.sardine.ai. In this company's case, over 1,800 customer disputes have been filed for $33 million just on Amex. Because Perch doesn't have new money coming in, Amex may be forced to pay that out of their own pocket if Perch doesn't fund the disputes. And Amex is also suing them because Perch isn't responding to the disputes with the important transaction information, so Amex can't fight these. So basically, there's no way for Amex to even try to cut their losses because, and the same goes for Worldpay too. They can't dispute on behalf of the merchant. I've had to do that before where a merchant kind of takes off, but then the processor is like, well, we're going to do whatever we can to get as much money back as we can, or at least not owe as much as we can. Because, I mean, a lot of times when word gets out that a company closed up shop, more chargebacks come in that would usually be won if the merchant provided proof of delivery. So at this point, when a store closes up shop, it's really, you know, customer's word against the merchant's word, and the merchant isn't there to give a word. So people can see it as an opportunity to get a free pizza oven or a free, you know, range or whatever they bought from that luxury retailer from an appliance perspective. What I also thought was interesting was the rest of the article that was talking about the filings from Amex specifically. They alluded to signs of financial fraud. So they said there are also signs that Perch may have engaged in some kind of financial fraud that is ripe for inquiry and investigation and may be careening towards an inevitable bankruptcy. Indeed, apart from its obligations to Amex, Perch apparently owes millions of dollars to various other creditors, including various landlords and a supplier who recently sued the retailer for over $4 million in unpaid inventory. Such facts typically do not emerge in this context without the possibility of significant financial and or accounting fraud, the lawsuit states. Other details from this lawsuit, and this is the one with Amex. Amex has already processed $5 million in chargebacks from Perch customers and is now facing an additional $33 million in disputes. So actually, what that tells me is that they've already had $5 million in chargebacks, but that they see that there's a possibility of $33 million in disputes. If 1,800 Perch customers, which they said in the suit that there were 1,800 transactions, will be disputing $33 million. That would put the average disputed transaction through that merchant at around $18,300. These are really big ticket items, and the bigger the ticket, the bigger the risk for the processor and, I mean, also the merchant. But at this point, I think it's safe to say that this particular merchant is, you know, not going to be able to absolve themselves, especially since they lay off their entire workforce, both in the home office and their stores. Amex said that at this rate, it's losing about $1.6 million per day. And I believe that's what I'm not sure about is if that's $1.6 million per day in all disputes like that they have to cover, or if that's just to Perch, because that wouldn't really add up unless they're just looking at a month. So that's a difficult one to understand without reading the lawsuit. But one former Perch sales associate who spoke on the condition of anonymity because of fears for his future employment estimated that American Express may account for 50% of the company's sales volumes in terms of dollar value, with the rest being charged to other credit cards like Visa and MasterCard, or payment by check, wire transfer, and cash. I don't know how much they would, I mean, I don't know, at $18,000 per transaction, I don't know how many they had in cash. Credit card transaction processing company Worldpay is also suing Perch, claiming the company owes it more than $10.4 million in chargebacks that it's already covered out of pocket. Worldpay has effectively been left holding the bag for well over $10 million in reverse charges initiated by Perch's customers, for which Perch previously received the sales transaction proceeds, their complaint states. Worldpay started processing debit and credit card payments for Perch in 2015, according to the complaint filed in an Ohio county court. So I know Worldpay has Ohio offices, so maybe that's why. The suit states that Perch's customers are motivated by a lack of explanation, updates, or any transparency provided by Perch after it closed its stores. And they began disputing the charges on their cards and obtaining chargebacks from the issuers of those cards in exceptionally large numbers. Like others suing Perch, Worldpay claims that Perch has refused to give Worldpay any information about inventory, orders, and its ability to fulfill outstanding orders. The only response Worldpay has received in an email dated March 26th, 2024, in which Perch's chief financial officer, and then they gave her name, I don't think it matters here, but McCall Kaltenbach, I think, said she had nothing to communicate and failed to address any of Worldpay's questions or expressed concerns, which that's not what I would have advised to them. It's just, it's a good example of the type of risk that merchant processors are trying to avoid. When I was a risk analyst, this only happened to me once, and it was actually with a company that was already in trouble before they were assigned to me. Payment processors look at a lot of indicators of health and risk across their merchant portfolios. If sales start to go down and or chargeback disputes claiming did not receive or not as described start to go up suddenly, that can be an indicator that a company may not be able to provide the items that the customers are purchasing. And there are some companies that, you know, will get these types of chargebacks here or there. But when you start to see it on a large number of transactions, kind of all of a sudden, out of the realm of what's acceptable level or what's been normally processed. I mean, in this case, this merchant had been processing with Worldpay for 10 years or almost 10 years. So they had, 9 years worth of history to see, okay, they might get 20 or 30 chargebacks per merchant ID per month, so there might be a chance that customers are claiming they didn't get the merchandise when they really did, or maybe there's a one-off situation that the merchant doesn't handle. But a lot of times high chargebacks, especially those that aren't the fraud reason code, but even if the fraud reason code, but especially those outside of the fraud reason code, it's usually a sign of bad customer service. It's usually a sign of they're not being good communication with your customers or good delivery. Something that, your customer is buying won't be delivered for 30 days. They need to know that. If they're expecting it tomorrow and it doesn't come, they can easily call their bank and ask for a chargeback. But now that it's been in the headlines that this company is closing, and I think you'll see a lot of customers just say, well, I'm going to call my bank and get my money back, even if I did get this merchandise, because the merchant isn't going to respond to it. Not everyone knows that, but I think enough people do that it's taken advantage of. And sometimes the bank will do that too. Sometimes issuing banks will do that where they'll say, oh, it looks like this company's going out of business. We're just going to assume that they haven't provided what was needed to our customers and issue chargebacks on their behalf. I don't think that Perch is big enough for that, but some of the bigger merchants that are national, that can happen if something suddenly happens like that. It's not out of the realm to think that the banks might just start issuing them. Some of the tools that processors can use to protect themselves is, like I said, they can freeze all payments to the merchant until a larger reserve is collected. But I mean, or they can put a number of days hold on deposits to slow the money down. But that's when money's coming in. Once there's not any money coming in and all you're seeing is chargebacks going out, it might be too late. You can take it out of the reserve, but then you have to look at things like filing lawsuits, like in these cases. Because every processor knows that if a merchant suddenly goes out of business, especially without fulfilling orders, they're in big trouble. The processor took on the risk and they took on the liability. And in some cases, there are processors that take on liability for other processors and just hope that they, are looking at the risk as well. So it's, quite a risk, but at the same time, most companies don't want to go out of business. And so that's what the underwriting process is for, is making sure that the companies that are processing, payments on your platform are doing so by complying to all of the rules and regs of cards, and that they're, providing the services that are being paid for, and that they're, not just going to shut their doors and not close out all of those issues. That can be a really big problem when it does happen, obviously. So like I mentioned, this story kind of reminded me a little bit of the chargeback surety story that we talked about in January, and I'll be providing a few more updates on that soon. I know I've talked about, check fraud and banking fraud lately, and so I wanted to kind of circle back around to merchant processing fraud back where, I got my start, because I do think that it's something that's not always understood, even, for merchants and also for issuing banks. Right? It can be challenging. I'm sure that if these merchant processors were able to get the information that they needed to, for transactions, and they were able to get proof that some goods were delivered, or they were able to get access to the merchant's CRM, for example, they would probably have their chargeback department processing chargebacks on behalf of the merchant. That's something I had to do once, because you're just trying to get as much money back as you possibly can. But at this point, because the merchant isn't complying with the information being requested, probably because they don't have any employees anymore, they're just going straight to lawsuit. And it's important for the processor in this case, especially these types of cases, to get in line as quickly as possible as a creditor. Because the longer they wait to file that lawsuit, more likely they are to be further down the list. So that's why, it hasn't even been a month yet, or it's just barely been a month since this company closed their doors, and there's already several lawsuits filed. Amex for 33, Worldpay for 10.6 million, but I'm sure the Worldpay one will go up further if they're only basing it off of what they've had to pay out of pocket so far. My guess would be that there'll be a lot more in the coming months. So kind of a dicey game. And, you know, the only repercussions are that that company won't be allowed to accept credit card payments going forward. But the officers of those companies generally get another chance. Sometimes they get put on the match list as well, which is a list that goes out to all payment processors of companies that can't receive merchant services anymore. Sometimes the owner of the merchant account also gets named on there. It just depends on the way that the company is set up and the processor and what they put on the match list. So anyway, that was really the main story this week that caught my attention. There were a couple others around check fraud, but like I said, we've talked about that quite a bit and it wasn't really anything new. And I thought this was more something that we could, you know, learn a few things from. So thank you again for listening to the podcast. I appreciate you all so much. And I look forward to speaking with you more next week.